Broadcast Studios, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Welcome into ABQ Connect. Paul Gessing, president of the Rio Grande Foundation, is going to be on the phone with us today in our first half hour. In our second half hour, we'll be talking with Carlos Griego, Bosque Plumbing and Heating, about how you can still get things fixed around your home and everything and all of the protocols they're following. In terms of the political world, though, nobody better to talk to than our friend Paul. Paul, thanks for joining us on ABQ Connect.
Hey, good to be here, Jim, although virtually, of course, today in this time of social distancing.
Yeah, well, we just got a little email from Skip Heitzik, the pastor of Calvary Albuquerque, and his first sentence is, hey, I don't like being socially distant from anyone, but it's an essential thing right now, and he encourages everybody to maintain that, and it looks like it's having some positive results. So if there is something good that maybe our governor is doing, maybe that's one of them.
Yeah, so far, you know, I'm not a expert on the spread of viruses and whatnot, but I think she's been fine on that in terms of doing her best. I hope she allows people to continue getting out on some of the local trails and park areas that we have, blessed to have here in New Mexico, that allow us to get some exercise and enjoy God's glory here out in the great outdoors, while also being rather socially distant. And my family, we had the opportunity this past weekend to go up to the volcanoes that are west of our city and enjoy that. Those are owned federally, at least maintained and managed federally. So they're not under the governor's control, but various government agencies are considering, you know, different opportunities and options to enforce social distancing. And I hope that the governor is reasonable about that, as well as the people who take advantage of those opportunities, that they don't congregate together unnecessarily and potentially spread the virus. But that's the situation we're dealing with.
Paul, I've been a little bit encouraged by seeing all the creative ways that businesses seem to, especially restaurants, you know, curbside pickups and drive-ups and packaged meals and all of these different things. And that's been pretty important for, like, my parents. My parents are in their 80s. They don't really enjoy cooking that much anymore, although at one time they really did. But now they just want to be able to pick something up. But at their age, they're very concerned about, you know, COVID-19. And so they really appreciate restaurants. In fact, I went by Chili's the other day and picked them up some fajitas. And they really appreciate the convenience and how delicious that food is. So I encourage all of the restaurateurs out there. There are a lot of folks that would really take advantage of carry out if you have it available. I know it's a big adjustment. But, Paul, I get the feeling that we might have to be doing a lot of this carry out longer than we think.
Yeah, I think you are correct. You know, I know vaccines are in the works, and there's a lot of other people working to try to address this issue. But, you know, the governor of Virginia just passed a executive order mandating the social isolation, things that have been in effect in most states around the country, including Virginia. But they're now through June the 10th. So they've taken a pretty aggressive approach there. But, yeah, I think summertime is really what we're looking at in terms of hoping that things start to return back to normal. But, again, there's so many different factors and, you know, people working on it. We'll just see how it all shakes out. Of course, the number one most obvious thing for parents like myself is the public schools are closed through the end of the school year, and that really is a challenge and a reality that we're dealing with right now.
Well, and a little bit later in the program, we're going to talk about why APS is not actually providing a lot of online educational opportunities like classes. They've got a lot of material that you can download, but I had the fortune of talking with the president of the APS school board, David Piercy, last week. So a little bit later in the program, we're going to talk about that. We have on the phone with us this afternoon Paul Gessing. He's the president of the Rio Grande Foundation. The Rio Grande Foundation is a nonprofit agency. You can find them at riograndefoundation.org. They need our support just like the rest of these businesses. Paul does an extensive amount of research on all kinds of topics, particularly focused around our state. He can tell you about everything that our state legislators and state senators vote on. He has a 2020 Freedom Index, which you can click on right now, and you can find out how your representatives in your district voted for each and every bill that that hit the floor this last legislative session. Paul, one of the things that you did frequently throughout the session, which started back January 17th or so, is you reported to us about every week and a half or so as to what was going on. And I remember you distinctly talking about the budget and pointing out that the governor, you wanted to encourage her not to go overspend in the budget, because you pointed out very prophetically now that oil and gas prices were not always at the levels they were at that time. And I believe crude oil was right at just about $60 a barrel. Today, crude oil is just slightly over $20 a barrel. And that is not a profitable number for oil producers in New Mexico, is it?
No, $20 a barrel is way below the price needed for New Mexico's producers in the Permian Basin on the whole to in order for them to achieve break even, let alone profitability. And no one could have seen this coming completely, but we definitely have looked at oil prices over the years, and you see increases and then you see decreases, and things come out of the blue. You just never know what to expect, and that's the industry that pays 40% of New Mexico's budget. It is a driver for our economy, and it's one of the issues that's going to make New Mexico, I think, very slow to recover from this coronavirus-driven economic downturn, because you know, we really don't have an economy in any real sense of the word right now. That's not just here in New Mexico, that's around the country, because so much of what people normally do in their lives, whether it's working or spending money, is just shut down right now. But once we get past this, which hopefully as the weather warms up, which I know is a factor in kind of killing this virus and slowing its spread, hopefully the summertime is good to killing the virus. But mm-hmm. Once we get past this situation, or at least move into a little bit more normalcy, New Mexico's budget is still going to be in deep, in some deep challenge, thanks to $20 a barrel oil right now. And I don't see that situation turning around really in the near future. There's too many systemic factors pushing prices down. Maybe we'll go up to $25. Maybe we'll go all the way up to $30. But I think we're in a moving forward kind of a depressed market for oil and gas.
And Paul, the coronavirus is really not the main reason for the drop in oil prices, because I don't think there's a lot less driving. There's a lot less fuel being used, obviously, for transportation, airplanes and buses and so forth. But the thing that happened almost simultaneously, and I'm sure there was some strategy, but Saudi Arabia basically started fighting with Russia about oil and gas prices, and I think both of them were interested in getting the United States and U.S. producers out of the market. Is that accurate?
That's one of the other factors. And you know, kind of looking back, and we've talked about this a little bit on your shows in the past, but you know, I know we've had a lot of conversations and discussed a lot of different issues, and people definitely can be forgiven for not being aware of this situation. But You know, of course, fracking and the production techniques that we've seen in New Mexico have driven the boom. Well, the world, in particular, as a whole, is not consuming that much more oil and gas. So you put more supply on the market, and that's going to reduce prices. Now, for a while, Venezuela, which is kind of an economic basket case, but also a major oil producer, had been on the sidelines, basically, and, you know, giving room, giving space to these Permian producers right here in New Mexico. Well, as the coronavirus started to take hold across the globe, prices were coming down. There was already natural oversupply in the market. And basically, the Saudis and the Russians, who can produce oil much more cheaply than we can here at the Permian Basin, they had been kind of withholding oil from the market, putting potential production aside in order to prop up prices. And somewhere in the hierarchy there in those countries, they finally decided, you know, we're tired of reducing our production. We're going to go after the American producers and undercut them in their prices. And it just so happens to be contiguous at the same time as this coronavirus has really depressed demand. So I can't tell you where prices will be if you get beyond the coronavirus, but the price war is still in effect, or whether the price war will last for 6 months, a year, or 5 years, who knows? But what I can tell you, and what I would say to the policymakers of this state, is that we have a natural oversupply of oil in this country, in this world, and that is a definite problem for New Mexico's producers, for not just the short term, but the intermediate and long term. And it's also a problem for New Mexico policymakers. And it's why we at the Rio Grande Foundation, you know, not the boy who cries wolf, because the wolf eventually did come, but we were out there. You know, we've been out there kind of since day one, since I started the Rio Grande Foundation over a decade ago, pushing the idea that New Mexico needs to diversify its economy. Now, a lot of folks in Santa Fe will say, well, we diversified our tax revenues, and that means we diversified our economy. No, we need to diversify our overall economy to create a private sector that can stand on its own 2 feet alongside the federal presence that we have in the oil and gas industries that do so much for New Mexico.
Yes. Paul, one of the things I like about you and the Rio Grande Foundation is that you do have some disagreements with people and the way they're run, the governor, some of our state legislators, our senators. You have disagreements, but I have not seen an example yet where you didn't pose a solution, and that's what I like about you. So as we go through the budget stuff today, you know, let's keep in mind that you do have some suggestions and some things. So the very first thing we want to talk about is the governor obviously has to do something about this budget that was passed. I mean, out of the, what, $7.6 billion they added to the, or the $1.6 billion they added to the $7.6 million overall budget, we could be losing as much as 30 or 40% of that revenue because of the oil and gas stuff we've been thinking about. So how do they correct this budget without raising taxes?
Yeah, that is an excellent question. And so let's take a step back. So when Governor Susana Martinez left office, the state's general funds was at $6.3 billion. And numbers I know can get a little intimidating, especially at the size that we're talking about and on the airwaves. So 6.3 is where we were when 2 years ago, essentially, in budget terms. Now, the budget that was signed just in February, that seems almost ancient history now, given everything that's happened, was at 7.6. So that's a growth of $1.3 billion. Now, according to this morning, Santa Fe, New Mexican, John Arthur Smith, the kind of guru of New Mexico's budgets in terms of the legislature, chairman of the Senate Finance Committee, said that we are facing a shortfall of $2 billion for the budget that was passed. So this is moving ahead to July 1st when the fiscal year begins. Fiscal years, I don't know why they do it this way, but fiscal years for governments and a lot of corporations, they last July 1 to June 30. So we're kind of coming to the end of the fiscal year at the state, and we're moving into the fiscal year where the budget was passed just recently. So with a, you know, you do the math, 7.6 minus 6.3, that's a $1.3 billion difference in terms of money.
Right.
So we are facing a bigger shortfall starting in July than we had money in terms of growth in the last 2 years. Now, this is a dynamic situation. We just talked about oil and gas prices. That could change. We're certainly hoping that the economy is allowed to get back on its feet and people are allowed to travel and return to business as usual. But we know that the situation is going to be challenging. Now, the question is, you know, I say any new spending over the last 2 years needs to be eliminated. $320 million needs to be eliminated from the new early childhood program that was just started in this last session. The free college thing needs to be pulled back. That's about $30 million or so. But we also, and I think need to, the governor needs to be on this right away. 17% pay raises were given out to cabinet officials. That's not a big financial decision, but it's a big symbolic move because we're all in this together. We really are. Democrat, Republican, Libertarian, Green, whoever it may be, we need to be in this together. And you know, we're looking at potential unemployment rates nationwide of over 30%. People working for the government have a lot of security, a lot of advantages right now over private sector folks. And I think increases in pay that were passed, 17%, like I said, for cabinet officials. Mm-hmm. Raquel Reedy of APS got 11%. A lot of folks at APS got 11%. Those are driven by the state. We need to peel back on pay raises that were handed out like candy in the last 2 years. Those are some of the starting points. Capital outlay money that hasn't been spent yet needs to be peeled back. We need, you know, the K-12 system is shut down across the state. Any additional money that can be pulled out of that system because it's not operational right now, largely. Yes, there's online learning and some other things, but basically it's shut down. So what money is available through that? You've got the Rail Runner, which is shut down. That's spending, and that needs to be on the chopping block in general. So there's a lot of money floating around out there, and I'd like to see the governor, as we kind of move beyond the crisis with the virus to the budget crisis, the governor needs to start to be a little more aggressive in putting out her plan for how we get New Mexico's economy moving. I realize it's still a little early, things are shut down, but the budget, that is a day-to-day document. The further we move forward and spend the money based on the old budget, the worse things get in having to turn the situation around. And it's a problem that needs to be addressed starting right away.
Paul, we're going to say thank you to some of our sponsors. We're going to be right back with you. Stay with us. One more segment with Paul Gessing, president of the Rio Grande Foundation. We'll be right back.
Quality, experience, personal service. Dom Garcia Realty, placing the interest of others first.
I needed to sell my father's house that he had lived in for 65 years. When I was working on the house, Dom stopped by and looked at it. He had the resources and people to help me get the house presentable for a sale. Dom Garcia is a very positive, enthusiastic person. He sees all the positives and not the negatives. Dom worked very hard to make the sale happen. He was always available to answer all my questions and take my phone calls all hours, day or night.
We are a full-service broker that includes working with buyers and sellers, renting, leasing, management, whether residential or commercial.
Dom Garcia Realty, 899-4644.
899-4644. Se habla español.
Here's Pastor Mike Fabares with your one-minute focal point.
Have you ever felt like you're being bombarded with conflicting Christian voices? I mean, people pointing to the same passage of Scripture, but somehow coming to completely different conclusions. All these instructors claim to be Christ's sheep, but we ought to be careful because Jesus warned that some of them might in fact be harmful and deceptive wolves. Unfortunately, making the distinction between what's biblically sound and what's not isn't as simple as we might hope. False teaching will almost always have plenty of truth mixed in, and that's why it makes it so insidious. So, learning how to be discerning without being incredulous or hypercritical, it's an essential Christian virtue. And that's why we need to be diligent to study God's Word. We need to know the truth so that we can discern it from error.
Want more? Join Pastor Mike Fabares each weekday on Focal Point to be equipped for life. Details at focalpointradio.org.
You're listening to KNKT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Welcome back into ABQ Connect. Paul Gessing, president of the Rio Grande Foundation, is on the line with us. And if you have not taken the time to go to riograndefoundation.org, you really should, because there's so much information. When you first go in, you can click on the Freedom Index. I really like to page down to the top issues. There's stuff about the Constitution, the economy, education, the legislature, energy, local government, transparency, healthcare, the legislature. There's testimonies that Paul has given in front of several state committees, and it's a fascinating website full of great information. So want to encourage everybody to go to that. Paul, that takes a lot of work to put together all this information.
Yeah, it does. And it's a challenge, because we'd really like to see New Mexico do well, diversify its economy, and make some of the right decisions. But unfortunately, for a very long time, New Mexico has tended to depend on federal spending and rely on a very volatile industry, the oil and gas industry. And we certainly appreciate that industry and what it does for not just the state in terms of the revenues and the jobs, but what it does to keep America moving in good times and in bad. But we try to make recommendations and hope that policymakers and work with policymakers to get them to do the right thing for New Mexico. Can't say it's been easy to get these folks to make those hard decisions, but now we face nothing but hard decisions. And sometimes, it's a very double-edged quote. The whole Rahm Emanuel, former Obama advisor, never let a good crisis go to waste. Well, when you get into a crisis situation, you can go a lot of different directions. You can enact bad policies, which I think the worst thing that we could do right now in a special session would be to raise taxes and make life even more difficult for businesses and families. We already did that in 2019, and that was unfortunate. I don't think, unfortunately, that's going anywhere. But we've got this budget crisis. We need to do what we can to get beyond it. And if that involves kind of right-sizing our state and local governments, hey, at least that's a starting point that's going to get us moving in a better direction. Obviously, we don't deal as much with the federal government, but the bailout that just passed, I mean, if you'd come to me, Jim, and 6 months ago and told me that soon the federal government would take a $2.2 trillion stimulus package and pass that and practically do it unanimously, not even with a real vote, like no controversy, I would have said you're crazy. But we just piled on top of the $22 trillion that we owe as a federal government, as a country, another $2.2 trillion in the blink of an eye. It's pretty crazy. And there's a lot of things happening right now that I really never thought would happen in my lifetime. We talked a little bit about religion, the just more personal level. I never thought I would, be experiencing church closed during Holy Week and Easter, I never thought March Madness and the NCAA basketball tournament. We're both hoops fans, and I'm really missing that and spring training and, you know, all the things that go on a regular basis. And it's just been the craziest time in my entire life, and probably yours and a lot of the listeners out there as well.
Absolutely. You know, different is not necessarily bad, though. I think it's gotten a lot of families together. I know we have, my family, I have five children. Three of them live here and two are other places in the country, and we've been having Zoom meetings a couple times a week. And I thought those calls would last 15 minutes. They're lasting an hour and 15 minutes every time. And they're just a lot of fun. It's fun to get together with family and stuff. So I encourage people that way. Paul, I need to shift gears now. We never have enough time to talk about all the things we put down on a schedule, but you mentioned your kids at the introduction of the show and talking about what you're doing with them and some fun things that you're doing. But there is really a concern about education for our kids right now. And I had an interesting meeting with David Piercy, the president of the Albuquerque School Board, here a week and a half or so ago. And very kind, gracious gentleman. And I asked him about educational opportunities, and what he told me, and I went into the APS website to check it out. They've put together a whole bunch of information that you can download and you can use with your kids. But what I gathered is they're not really allowed to provide technologies that would provide online streaming and things of different classes, because not everyone in the state has the ability to access that type of technology. And what they do for one, they have to do for everybody, which I understand that. But that's a particularly gigantic challenge. What are some of your ideas?
Wow, that is a tough question to answer. You know, one of the things that's frustrated me about the education system in our state and our country, and just kind of the whole mentality that we have moving forward in education, is that there's this one-size-fits-all approach that we've seen. And, you know, fairness and equity are concepts that I think to different people mean different things. Now, you know, if you have an educated set of parents that stay together and care about education, you are probably going to be just fine, not just in this crisis, but in general. And that's not fair. That is a reality of our civilization and our society. If you come from a broken family where the parents are divorced, or somebody has a drug problem, or whatever, it is also going to be, and I my heart breaks for kids, especially nowadays, where school might be their only form of escape, and now they're really dumped into a situation that they have very little in the way of an escape from. And I think the it's that Irish proverb where you I'm paraphrasing. You know, you do the things that you can change, and you understand that you can't change everything. And whether it's a school district or an individual or whoever, there are things that we simply cannot change. And you know, it's unfortunate, I think, that APS is kind of holding back some of these resources, saying that we don't have the ability to provide the same for everybody, so nobody gets as much as they could otherwise have. Full disclosure, Jim, I'm on the board of a virtual online statewide charter school called New Mexico Connections Academy. Mm-hmm. And virtual schooling has been kind of denigrated by a lot of folks around our state and policymakers and people saying, oh, it's not as good. Well, our school's continuing. We're not suffering from the same issues. And I think APS should allow and encourage more parents across the spectrum to have access to these tools, regardless of what people might or might not have. You just cannot live in a world where the lowest common denominator determines what everybody has access to. And, you know, we've been getting, you know, my kids are in a traditional public school. We've been getting resources from them, but we've also been directing them to explore online learning options. Khan Academy is one great free example, K-H-A-N. There's all kinds of different options. I'm a believer in teachers and great teachers making a difference, but we need to do the best we can across the board. And certainly, it's sad and unfortunate that some of the real disadvantaged kids may not have as many options and maybe left even further behind. But there's not much that can be done by the district or anybody else to solve those problems. It's a tough situation for everybody all around.
Yeah. Well, I know we also had what I'll call the Three Musketeers from Hope Christian School, their head of school, their athletic director, and the principal of the high school. And Hope Christian School is utilizing some Google tools to stream their classes and do all of those things, and they haven't even skipped a beat since all of this happened. And of course, this isn't as ideal as doing things in person, and the teachers and the students and the parents all have to get adjusted, and I'm sure they'll be able to deploy the technology much more effectively a month from now than they are today. But this is a growing, fluid kind of adjustment that we're all making at all different levels. So finally, I got to ask you a question about plastic bags, Paul. You were fighting against the plastic bag ban, and then when COVID came out, it just made sense to kind of let people start using plastic bags and things. But I've got to ask you, first of all, why can't plastic bags be recycled like every other plastic product?
Plastic bags can be recycled. They are often dumped into the bins at the front of grocery stores. There's bins there available for people to use to recycle their plastic bags. So that is a reality that they do have that recycling. Now, you know, when I was a kid, and you know, recycling's gotten its black eyes in recent years, and you know, there's always problems with anything in terms of reusing or restoring waste and addressing those issues. But reuse was the number one priority, and I think what you see in plastic bags is a lot more reuse than they're given credit for, and recycling's kind of a distant second. You know, when it comes to, say, aluminum cans that you drink soda and beer out of, those are recyclable very easily because you can melt down the aluminum and create new cans with them, and that's great. Plastic is a lot less easy to recycle and put into a new product. So what happens with plastic bags is that you have trash can liners, you have pet waste picker uppers, for lack of a better word, and we use those as a family very regularly. In fact, I have to disclose that one of my family members during the ban went to one of the recycling bins at the grocery store and pulled out a stack of plastic bags that were intended to be recycled because we were running out of bags for our two dogs and for the house to keep our trash cans clean and lined. So hopefully the 30-day reprieve that the mayor has given will be extended just based on good policy, common sense. But it really doesn't make sense, period, for that ban to be in place because these reusable bags, and again, everything's okay if you use it in the exact way it's intended. You know, if you wash the cloth bag or whatever every single time you use it, treat it, but then you lose a lot of the environmental benefits. And I think policymakers have this idea that they know best, that they're going to control decisions made by average people, when in reality they do a very poor job of that. So we got the 30-day reprieve, although Mayor Keller and the folks at the city are saying that they're going to eliminate the thicker plastic bags that they've been using at grocery stores. I hope that doesn't happen and we're going to push back against them. Burnley Oak County also, in the unincorporated areas has their own plastic bag ban. And I understand, let's just say I've been talking to folks at the county. I believe they are going to act. They have a county commission meeting this evening, and there may be a reprieve on plastic bags at that elected body as well. But some states have outright banned, and some stores have outright banned the reuse of any bag that they only want you to use the plastic bags that they get at the store because of the issue with potentially spreading viruses and other illnesses through those bags. So it's complicated. Again, I'm not an epidemiologist. I don't know all the ins and outs of medicine and disease control, but I think there's a very good case to be made that these plastic bag bans can be bad for your health.
Amen. Paul Gessing, Rio Grande Foundation, thank you so much for joining us today on ABQ Connect, and we'll look forward to connecting back with you here in a couple weeks.
All right. Thank you, Jim. Good to talk to you.
Thanks, Paul.